Listening test. Task 1. You are going to listen to a man speaking about his youth in a big U.S. city. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, choose the correct answer, A, B, C, or D, for each question, 1 to 7. Put a cross in the correct box on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
I grew up in New York City in the late 80s and in the 1990s. And I'm very grateful to have grown up there because there was just so much energy there. For instance, when I was 4 years old, we moved into the 20th floor of an apartment building. And one of my best friends lived on the 37th floor. So from that height, you can imagine how small the cars looked. They looked like little ants, and when it was time to go to sleep, it would be dark outside, but I could see half of the city from my window, and there would be light everywhere. So it was certainly a unique experience. For fun, I enjoyed long evening walks through Madison Avenue or Central Park, which are, of course, very rich areas, very well-kept areas, and very pleasant to walk through. Or I would go to a certain donut shop that doesn't exist anymore, or a pizza shop that also doesn't exist anymore, and relax there. Or I'd meet my friends to play basketball or soccer at a public park, or we would go bike riding through Central Park, or meet in a friend's home to play board games. Going to school in New York City was also very unique and inspiring. For instance, the school system and our teachers encouraged us to read novels, and we would also recommend novels to each other. For instance, Catcher in the Rye or the famous war book Catch 22. We would read Dostoevsky, the Bronte sisters, Ayn Rand, Victor Hugo, and we'd talk about it. And I think that was a true enrichment of our childhood. And I also very much appreciate the research projects that we had to do in school. I enjoyed going to the library, trying to answer a question that I had asked myself, and then put my findings or what I discovered into a report to give in. We also had to visit museums. For instance, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and for some reason, I really enjoyed the African art, but not the Egyptian art. And I went to see the African wooden statues dozens of times. So all in all, it was a very fascinating and inspiring experience to grow up in New York City. I grew up in New York City in the late 80s and in the 1990s. And I'm very grateful to have grown up there because there was just so much energy there. For instance, when I was 4 years old, we moved into the 20th floor of an apartment building. And one of my best friends lived on the 37th floor. So from that height, you can imagine how small the cars looked. They looked like little ants, and when it was time to go to sleep, it would be dark outside, but I could see half of the city from my window, and there would be light everywhere. So it was certainly a unique experience. For fun, I enjoyed long evening walks through Madison Avenue or Central Park, which are, of course, very rich areas, very well-kept areas, and very pleasant to walk through. Or I would go to a certain donut shop that doesn't exist anymore, or a pizza shop that also doesn't exist anymore, and relax there. Or I'd meet my friends to play basketball or soccer at a public park, or we would go bike riding through Central Park, or meet in a friend's home to play board games. Going to school in New York City was also very unique and inspiring. For instance, the school system and our teachers encouraged us to read novels, and we would also recommend novels to each other. For instance, Catcher in the Rye or the famous war book Catch 22. We would read Dostoevsky, the Bronte sisters, Ayn Rand, Victor Hugo, and we'd talk about it. And I think that was a true enrichment of our childhood. And I also very much appreciate the research projects that we had to do in school. I enjoyed going to the library, trying to answer a question that I had asked myself, and then put my findings or what I discovered into a report to give in. We also had to visit museums. For instance, the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And for some reason, I really enjoyed the African art, but not the Egyptian art. And I went to see the African wooden statues dozens of times. So all in all, it was a very fascinating and inspiring experience to grow up in New York City.
Task 2. You are going to listen to Helen talking about a historical figure. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, complete the sentences 1 to 9 using a maximum of 4 words. Write your answers in the spaces provided on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
Well, whenever people ask you who your childhood hero is, I keep coming back to Captain Cook. What interested me most was his achievements as an explorer. It intrigued me to learn that this person had travelled so far to all corners of the world where people had not gone before. I thought it must have taken incredible courage to do something like that. And then when I became older, as a young adult, and I began travelling myself, I suddenly became aware that everywhere I went, it seemed that Captain Cook had been there. So as I learned more about Cook, I realised that not only was he an explorer, a navigator and a cartographer in his early days, before he got his commission to go on these voyages, he had travelled to Canada and he mapped the coast of Newfoundland. And even up to the 20th century, his maps were so accurate, they were still used. So Cook, the man himself, intrigues me too, because he kept meticulous journals, but there's nothing personal in his journals about him. We don't know anything about his inner thoughts. He was very objective in everything he recorded. He was also a very modest man. A lot of places bear his name, but they were given his name by other people. He named geographic points after his sponsors, after royalty, after things that happened, such as, I think, Deception Point and Mount Warning and things like that, things that reflect good or bad mishaps on the voyage. Another thing I admire about him is that he was very respectful of the indigenous people that they encountered along the way. He tried to befriend them and learn from them. He did not treat them as ignorant savages, which was quite progressive for the time that he lived in, the 18th century. It's quite sad. He could have lived after the second voyage. He could have retired and lived a very peaceful, comfortable life in London. But for some reason, he was compelled to return to the sea. And sadly, his third voyage was his last one. When I was in Australia in 2009, I was delighted to find that the replica Endeavour was moored in Sydney Harbour, outside the Maritime Museum there. So I was able to go on board and actually see the interior of the ship and appreciate how difficult it must have been to just exist for 2-3 years living in such cramped, close quarters. And not just the crew, but the officers as well. And I got to see Cook's cabin and then the officer's stateroom. It provided quite a bit of insight into what it must have been like to experience that kind of life on the sea. Or whenever people ask you who your childhood hero is, I keep coming back to Captain Cook. What interested me most was his achievements as an explorer. It intrigued me to learn that this person had travelled so far to all corners of the world where people had not gone before. I thought it must have taken incredible courage to do something like that. And then when I became older, as a young adult, and I began travelling myself, I suddenly became aware that everywhere I went, it seemed that Captain Cook had been there. So as I learned more about Cook, I realised that not only was he an explorer, a navigator and a cartographer in his early days, before he got his commission to go on these voyages, he had travelled to Canada and he mapped the coast of Newfoundland. And even up to the 20th century, his maps were so accurate, they were still used. So Cook, the man himself, intrigues me too, because he kept meticulous journals, but there's nothing personal in his journals about him. We don't know anything about his inner thoughts. He was very objective in everything he recorded. He was also a very modest man. A lot of places bear his name, but they were given his name by other people. He named geographic points after his sponsors, after royalty, after things that happened, such as, I think, Deception Point and Mount Warning and things like that, things that reflect good or bad mishaps on the voyage. Another thing I admire about him is that he was very respectful of the indigenous people that they encountered along the way. He tried to befriend them and learn from them. He did not treat them as ignorant savages, which was quite progressive for the time that he lived in, the 18th century. It's quite sad. He could have lived after the second voyage. He could have retired and lived a very peaceful, comfortable life in London. But for some reason, he was compelled to return to the sea. And sadly, his third voyage was his last one. When I was in Australia in 2009, I was delighted to find that the replica Endeavour was moored in Sydney Harbour, outside the Maritime Museum there. So I was able to go on board and actually see the interior of the ship and appreciate how difficult it must have been to just exist for 2-3 years living in such cramped, close quarters. And not just the crew, but the officers as well. And I got to see Cook's cabin and then the officer's stateroom. It provided quite a bit of insight into what it must have been like to experience that kind of life on the sea.
Task 3. You are going to listen to a Hawaiian writer talking about her childhood. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, complete the sentences 1 to 7 using a maximum of 4 words. Write your answers in the spaces provided on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
I switched schools every year until I was 9.
That's a lot.
What you get used to is, you know, making friends, and you also get used to leaving. It prepares you for different kind of relationships and different kinds of ways of navigating, and it also obliges you to be more open. And what it did was it made me closer, I think, to my family and to my parents, and to hold on to things that were permanent, let's say, like coming here, seeing grandma in the summer, or seeing my cousins here. This became a kind of a permanent idea.
Did you have any tricks about how to make friends as a kid when you were starting a new school?
No, and I think it did become difficult, and it's what propelled me to become a reader and a writer. Because at a certain point, I think, you know, we were often in these places like Iowa, where there were not a lot of Asian American children. And I remember telling my mom that I had troubles making friends. And she said, well, if you read a book, you'll always have a friend. And this had to do with how she was, I think. And she was a bookworm. And she was a mom who, you know, sought out intellectual and creative things. And we didn't talk as much about feelings. We could find those through books and things like that. So, you know, so books became my world. Books became a way that I could make friends. She was right. Books became a path to understanding and to figuring out how people behaved. And from reading comes writing, an idea of expressing personal narrative.
I think I've heard you say that your mom taught you the importance of creative expression. Your father taught you never to quit, which came in very handy when you're a writer seeking publication.
Yes, so that was definitely my father. So there's a saying he used to tell me, fall down 7 times, get up 8 times. A really perfect example of it was me with math studies. So when I was in 9th grade, I went off to boarding school at Phillips Academy Andover. I was a straight-A student prior. I get to Andover, everybody was a straight-A student, so I really struggled, and I was getting I think I was failing math, and so my father and mother said, we're tired of you, you know, calling us up at, you know, every night crying about your math homework, so you come back for Thanksgiving. So I came back for Thanksgiving. I did math 6 to 7 hours a day with my father, and flew back. I passed the exam, and then I stepped off the plane in December, and my dad said, we're conquering this math thing. And so I did math with my father. I went to work with him 6 to 8 hours a day, every single day of my 3-week holiday. I would sit there in the gas station in the front seat of the car while he's pumping the gas doing math problems. I did the entire math book over Christmas.
Now, did you want to do that? Did you resent that?
At first I resented it, but then after a while I liked it. I switched schools every year until I was 9.
That's a lot.
What you get used to is, you know, making friends, and you also get used to leaving. It prepares you for different kind of relationships and different kinds of ways of navigating, and it also obliges you to be more open. And what it did was it made me closer, I think, to my family and to my parents, and to hold on to things that were permanent, let's say, like coming here, seeing grandma in the summer, or seeing my cousins here. This became a kind of a permanent idea.
Did you have any tricks about how to make friends as a kid when you were starting a new school?
No, and I think it did become difficult, and it's what propelled me to become a reader and a writer. Because at a certain point, I think, you know, we were often in these places like Iowa, where there were not a lot of Asian American children. And I remember telling my mom that I had troubles making friends, and she said, well, if you read a book, you'll always have a friend. And this had to do with how she was, I think, and she was a bookworm, and she was a mom who, you know, sought out intellectual and creative things. And we didn't talk as much about feelings. We could find those through books and things like that. So, so books became my world. Books became a way that I could make friends. She was right. Books became a path to understanding and to figuring out how people behaved. And from reading comes writing, an idea of expressing personal narrative.
I think I've heard you say that your mom taught you the importance of creative expression. Your father taught you never to quit, which came in very handy when you're a writer seeking publication.
Yes, so that was definitely my father. So there's a saying he used to tell me, fall down 7 times, get up 8 times. A really perfect example of it was me with math studies. So when I was in 9th grade, I went off to boarding school at Phillips Academy Andover. I was a straight A student prior. I get to Andover, everybody was a straight A student. So I really struggled, and I was getting failing math. And so my father and mother said, we're tired of you, you know, calling us up at, you know, every night crying about your math homework. So you come back for Thanksgiving. So I came back for Thanksgiving. I did math 6 to 7 hours a day with my father, and flew back. I passed the exam. And then I stepped off the plane in December, and my dad said, we're conquering this math thing. And so I did math with my father. I went to work with him 6 to 8 hours a day, every single day of my 3-week holiday. I would sit there in the gas station in the front seat of the car while he's pumping the gas doing math problems. I did the entire math book over Christmas.
Now, did you want to do that? Did you resent that?
At first, I resented it, but then after a while, I liked it.
Task 4. You are going to listen to a recording about sports people can do in Golden Gate Park. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, match the beginnings of the sentences 1 to 8 with the sentence endings A to K. There are two sentence endings that you should not use. Write your answers in the boxes provided on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
While birders delight in wandering the park, it's also a nice place to be a kid. Here's one learning how to ride a bike.
Keep going, you're doing it,
We're walking through this urban forest, and the trees have gotten especially thick to our right. Look closely, and you'll see there's a golf course in there. Now, a lot of people who live in San Francisco don't even know that. But there it is, 9 holes that welcome people of all skill levels, unfussy and lovely. In fact, Golf Magazine recently said it's one of the best small courses in the country, another hidden gem of Golden Gate Park. But we're not here to play golf today. We're targeting a different sport. And just past the course's parking lot on 47th Avenue, just a couple of blocks from the beach, we've arrived at our destination. Luisa Cardoza is here to tell us about it.
If you've ever been to the Outside Lands Music Festival at the Polo Fields on the other side of Golden Gate Park, the archery range would probably fit in one corner. There are 8 large targets set up, each about 10 feet apart, and standing at varying distances from the main path at the edge of the range. I'm here with Scott Bullard, certified archery coach. And we are about to shoot some arrows.
Down relaxed. Raise up. Draw back.
1, 2, let go.
Bullard works at the San Francisco Archery Shop about 10 blocks from the park and gives lessons almost daily. A lot of people are into archery these days as the sport has become so visible in the pop culture. There's Merida from the Disney movie Brave, Clint Barton and Oliver Queen from the comic books Hawkeye and Green Arrow, and of course, Katniss. The stakes are certainly not as high here in the park as they are in the Hunger Games, but honing your skills takes just as much patience and a lot of practice shots.
And that might be best phrased as forming an association between the feeling of your shot and the result on the target.
In other words, knowing what it feels like to land that arrow every time. Archery is a lot more physical than folks might think. During my lesson, I become very aware of my core, which supports my upper back muscles, my neck, and shoulder blades. Those muscles help me raise the bow and have an open rather than collapsed stance.
Archery is an endurance sport, so we want that last arrow to be as good as the first.
People have been shooting arrows at targets here in Golden Gate Park for over 130 years, and there's a wide variety of folks who use the range, from recreational shooters to seasoned bow hunters. After a few more practice shots, Bullard decides to shoot some arrows on his own, so I take a walk around the range to see who else is practicing. The first person I meet is a local beginner, 11-year-old Dorothy Holt.
We started coming out here because I got a target and stuff like that. It was really, really fun to do. Yeah! I hit that time.
Dorothy is one of many young women who've started coming to the range in recent years. I ask her if archery is something she wants to pursue as a sport.
I just want to keep going at it, be able to pick up a bow and arrow and shoot.
While birders delight in wandering the park, it's also a nice place to be a kid. Here's one learning how to ride a bike.
Keep going, you're doing it.
We're walking through this urban forest, and the trees have gotten especially thick to our right. Look closely, and you'll see there's a golf course in there. Now, a lot of people who live in San Francisco don't even know that. But there it is, 9 holes that welcome people of all skill levels, unfussy and lovely. In fact, Golf Magazine recently said it's one of the best small courses in the country, another hidden gem of Golden Gate Park. But we're not here to play golf today. We're targeting a different sport. And just past the course's parking lot on 47th Avenue, just a couple of blocks from the beach, we've arrived at our destination. Luisa Cardoza is here to tell us about it.
If you've ever been to the Outside Lands Music Festival at the Polo Fields on the other side of Golden Gate Park, the archery range would probably fit in one corner. There are 8 large targets set up, each about 10 feet apart, and standing at varying distances from the main path at the edge of the range. I'm here with Scott Bullard, certified archery coach. And we are about to shoot some arrows.
Down relaxed. Raise up. Draw back.
1, 2, let go.
Bullard works at the San Francisco Archery Shop, about 10 blocks from the park, and gives lessons almost daily. A lot of people are into archery these days, as the sport has become so visible in the pop culture. There's Merida from the Disney movie Brave, Clint Barton and Oliver Queen from the comic books Hawkeye and Green Arrow, and of course, Katniss. The stakes are certainly not as high here in the park as they are in the Hunger Games, but honing your skills takes just as much patience and a lot of practice shots.
And that might be best phrased as forming an association between the feeling of your shot and the result on the target.
In other words, knowing what it feels like to land that arrow every time. Archery is a lot more physical than folks might think. During my lesson, I become very aware of my core, which supports my upper back muscles, my neck, and shoulder blades. Those muscles help me raise the bow and have an open rather than collapsed stance.
Archery is an endurance sport, so you want that last arrow to be as good as the first.
People have been shooting arrows at targets here in Golden Gate Park for over 130 years, and there's a wide variety of folks who use the range, from recreational shooters to seasoned bow hunters. After a few more practice shots, Bullard decides to shoot some arrows on his own, so I take a walk around the range to see who else is practicing. The first person I meet is a local beginner, 11-year-old Dorothy Holt.
We started coming out here because I got a target and stuff like that. It was really, really fun to do. Yeah! I hit that time.
Dorothy is one of many young women who've started coming to the range in recent years. I ask her if archery is something she wants to pursue as a sport.
I just want to keep going at it, be able to pick up a bow and arrow and shoot.
This is the end of the listening test.